Hi, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. My guest today is the senior senator from Maryland, Ben Cardin. We are 2 weeks into a Trump administration that has, on the one hand, moved quickly to make good on several campaign promises, but which has also retreated from other positions, seemingly in favor of policies long held by previous administrations. Senator Cardin is the ranking member of the Foreign Relations Committee. We'll talk about Russia's latest moves in Ukraine, new settlements in Israel, new sanctions against Iran, a feud with Australia, and the impact of the controversial travel ban. Plus, what will the repeal of Obamacare mean for Marylanders? And if appeals court judge Neil Gorsuch sings with the Supremes, what will that mean for the highest court in the land? Senator Ben Cardin joins me in Studio A midday. Starts right after these headlines. And welcome to this Friday edition of Midday, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. My guest today is Senator Ben Cardin. With the retirement of Senator Barbara Mikulski last month, Mr. Cardin is now Maryland's senior senator. He is also the ranking member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and he is with us for the hour. Good to see you, sir. Thank you for your time.
Tom, it's a pleasure to be with you. I always enjoy these conversations.
Well, glad to have you. We will be taking your questions and comments later in the show at 410-662-8780. That's our number here on Midday. Our email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle if you want to drop us a tweet, @MiddayTomHall. So, Senator, you have been representing Maryland for 50 years. You had 20 years in the Maryland legislature, you had 20 years in Congress, and now 10 years in the Senate. You've seen administrations come and go, both state and national. You've seen the fortunes of various political leaders rise and fall. We're 2 weeks into the Trump administration. What do you see these 2 weeks being in terms of a harbinger for what we can expect over the next 4 years? This has been a tumultuous and unexpected election. What's your initial take here?
I must tell you, I think nothing has prepared me for this type of a presidency. I am very concerned. I don't believe you can do foreign policy through a tweet. I've seen in a very short period of time our relationship with Australia, of all countries, take a turn for the worse. Mexico, how he's insulted the Mexican people as well as the president with this wall and the comments about Mexican Americans. And then you go to our traditional allies of Europe are wondering whether they're going to be left alone, whether America's returning to isolation and whether NATO protection will be there if they need it from Russia. So I've seen in a very short period of time on foreign policy a president who has really caused concern about America's reliability. And then on the domestic side, you see that he's doing things that are reversing a lot of progress that has been made in the past. That we don't have the traditional checks and balances with the Republicans controlling both houses of Congress, that these executive orders, the one issued last Friday on immigration, is outrageous. It's not only offensive and embarrassing, it's dangerous. It makes America less safe. I talked to leaders in the Middle East and Europe this past week who told me that this is going to be a recruitment tool for the terrorists, that Americans traveling abroad are going to be at greater risk. So it is something that is happening that is really a major concern. People are fearful. People are energized. They want to do things. And we just need to energize our democratic system of government where we are the people and to move us country in the right direction.
Let's talk about Iran first. Got a lot to talk about today. But here's General Flynn, the National Security Advisor, last Wednesday talking about Iran.
The Trump administration condemns such actions by Iran that undermine security, prosperity, and stability throughout and beyond the Middle East, and which places American lives at risk. President Trump has severely criticized the various agreements reached between Iran the Obama administration, as well as the United Nations, as being weak and ineffective. Instead of being thankful to the United States in these agreements, Iran is now feeling emboldened. As of today, we are officially putting Iran on notice.
That was last Wednesday, following some missile tests that Iran conducted last week. This morning, the Trump administration has announced new sanctions against Iran. David Ignatius in the Washington Post suggests that if these sort of ill-planned and ill-conceived reactions to Iran continue, it could make this his Bay of Pigs. What do you think?
Well, once again, President Trump has moved forward on a foreign policy issue without consultations with members of Congress or perhaps even his own department expertise. What Iran is doing is wrong. And President Obama took action against Iran for its ballistic missiles. It doesn't mean we shouldn't respond. We should respond. We're not prohibited from responding because of the nuclear agreement. The nuclear agreement deals with their nuclear program. It doesn't deal with their ballistic missile program. They have violated international norms on their ballistic missiles. The United States should take action. But we should take action in consultation with our partners, particularly in Europe, because it's much more effective if they support what we are doing. I don't know whether that consultation took place or not. I doubt that it did. So I'm not critical of the specific action that was taken. It might be the appropriate action. It's certainly consistent in the manner of the people who are affected by it as to what has been done in the past as a result of ballistic missile violations. But it should have been done in consultation and working with our partners.
When we see things like the president's warning to Israel about settlements or language from U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley about Russia in the U.N. Security Council or the session yesterday, demanding that Russia withdraw from Crimea, the sanctions on Iran, there are some who are saying, well, this is actually the governing stage of his tenure here, and it's much different than the campaign stage. And in fact, he is sort of reverting to the policies of the Obama administration. Do you get the sense that, after a couple of weeks, he's waking up to the reality of what's going on, and he's going to embrace positions that perhaps you and other Democrats hold?
Well, his statement about Israeli settlements was certainly very similar to what we've heard from previous administrations. But we're not sure what his policy is in the Middle East. We'd like to understand his overall objective as to how the Palestinians and Israelis are going to be negotiating in the future on a two-state. How do we get the parties back to that type of discussion? We were certainly disappointed by the action in the United Nations. How does that fit into his overall strategy as it relates to the Middle East? And, of course, we all have our focus against the ISIS and the extremists that are operating in the Middle East. How do we get all of the willing partners together to focus on that? We need presidential leadership in developing a unified policy for America with the support of our allies. That we have no idea.
When it comes to the travel ban, which includes Iran, Iraq, Syria, and four other places. We hear in particular from universities the chill that this puts on research and the exchange of ideas among academics and scholars, scientists, et cetera. Have you heard anything from universities directly? And I wonder, when it comes to things like the Iran nuclear deal, which you voted against, Mr. Trump has spoken very harshly about the Iran nuclear deal. Is this an area where you think you personally and others who oppose that deal could work with the president and revise it in some bilateral way?
The Iran nuclear agreement is going forward. Those that opposed it most are of the view we got to enforce it. It's not a matter of renegotiating or getting out of it. The agreement is there. The sanction relief has been granted. We now need to make sure that Iran doesn't develop a nuclear weapon today, tomorrow, or ever, and we have to enforce the agreement. There are other activities we have to take action, as we've talked about on the ballistic missile. So, in regards to the immigration ban and the refugee freeze, that is not only against what America stands for, it is dangerous. It's going to hurt us. It is being used by people who disagree with us as a recruitment tool to get terrorists. It makes Americans who are traveling abroad less safe. So we've got it. There's no justification whatsoever for trying to impose a religious ban. The seven countries that were selected are all Muslim and majority countries. The president said, well, we'll give priority to Christians. We've heard that this is an effort to legalize a Muslim ban. Then the refugee program is frozen and ended as it relates to Syria. We've taken in a few thousand Syrian refugees. Europe's taken in millions. I talked to the King Abdullah of Jordan. They've taken in 650,000, and we're asking the international community to respond, and we're closing our doors. We did that once before in World War II, and we know what happened when the St. Louis was turned back and Jews died in Europe. This is not what America stands for, and we are not going to be silent about this. There's no way to work with the president on these issues.
But how do you respond to the Trump administration, which says because Europe has taken in so many refugees, some very bad actors are sneaking in with them? We just had an event this morning at the Louvre in Paris, or last night, of a terrorist attacking police officers in downtown Paris. I mean, his argument is that basically you shut off everybody, and that way nobody, including the bad people, can get in. How do you respond?
King Abdullah of Jordan's taken in 650,000 Syrian refugees. He tells us Syrian refugees are not his problem. That's not where the troublemakers are coming from. The troublemakers are the Palestinian extremists that are self-motivated extremists within Jordan itself. In the United States, we've had zero problems from Syrian refugees. Not one has created a problem. They are the most vetted individuals coming into America. It takes 18 to 24 months for a refugee to get to this country. They have to prove that they have been persecuted, that their lives are at risk in order to get refugee status. So these they go through numerous interviews, numerous background checks. These are vetted individuals. They're not causing
the problem. Extreme vetting is a fantasy. In other words, the vetting can't get any more extreme than it already is.
That's correct.
Yeah. Let's move to the Supreme Court. We're going to take a break in a couple of minutes, but I do want to get this one thing in. Can I ask you a dumb question from a dumb talk show host who is completely unencumbered by experience and erudition? Could the Senate tell Mr. McConnell, we will consider both of the nominees that are in front of the Senate? We'll start with Merrick Garland, and then we'll consider Neil Gorsuch. Has Merrick Garland officially withdrawn his nomination? I mean, does that – it was never considered for reasons that baffle a lot of people. Can't the Senate just say, okay, we got two nominees. We'll take them in order, the order they were proposed.
First, let me agree with you as to the circumstances we are confronted with. The Republican Senate leadership created a constitutional crisis last year by failing to consider President Obama's nomination, saying 10 months was not enough time to consider a nomination to the Supreme Court. It created a constitutional crisis. It was disrespectful not only to President Obama and the presidency, but also to the judicial branch of government. And it has caused damage to our system. When the Congress adjourned sine die, I think it was on the January 3rd of this year, the President Obama's nominee was withdrawn. It was not withdrawn. It died. It is no longer before the United States Senate. Mm-hmm. So it required President Trump to resubmit or to submit a name. So there's only one name before the United States Senate right now, and that's Judge Gorsuch for this appointment. So we have to consider, that's the nomination we have to consider. Now, how we consider that, the process we use, many of us are very much concerned about what happened last year. We want to have a fair process. We want to have a vetting process. But we are very suspect as to whether this Republican leadership that denied President Obama for 10 months an opportunity to be heard, whether they'll give the American people a fair process for true vetting of Judge Gorsuch. We're going to do everything we can to make sure that happens.
Do you support a filibuster to block the nomination?
It's too early to tell. I support a fair process so that American people can know what Judge Gorsuch's views are. We want mainstream. Mainstream means I want to put a person who's going to put the American people's interests before special interests on the Supreme Court of the United States.
We're going to take a quick break. We will come back and start taking some of your calls, questions, and comments. 410-662-8780 is the number here on Midday. Our email address, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. My guest is Senator Ben Cardin. More with Senator Cardin when we come back. Stick with us.
This is your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back, everybody. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall on this Super Bowl weekend. By the way, coming up on the next edition of Midday, there is a TV program airing on Sunday night that I'm told will include the premiere of a number of new ads. I'm told there's also a football game interpolated into those ads. And on Monday, we'll talk about some of the best ads, as well as what some experts call black ops advertising, where ads are indistinguishable from what often looks like content on the internet, in print, and on TV. Negotiating an unending barrage of ads from the Super Bowl to Facebook, that's coming up on Midday Monday. If you've just joined us today, we are spending the hour with the senior senator from Maryland, Ben Cardin. You are welcome to join our conversation, 410-662-8780, our email address, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. We've already gotten a number of tweets and questions. Let me start with a question. This is a tweet from AARP in Maryland, who says, please ask the senator about his plans regarding proposals to cut benefits to recipients of Medicare and Social Security. What are those proposals, and what's the Democrats' plan?
Well, we are very concerned. We know that if we take a look at some of his nominees for Health and Human Services or for the CMS or budget directors, that they have had proposals in that would cut Medicare and cut Medicaid and cut Social Security, or turn it into, in some cases, try to privatize Social Security and turn Medicare into a voucher program. So there are concerns. There's been no specific proposals made to date. So there's nothing pending in the United States Congress, but I think we're on notice. Now, President Trump, as candidate Trump, said he would not cut Medicare or Social Security. So we are going to hold him to that. We very much believe that Social Security is critically important. Many seniors depend upon their Social Security income as their prime source of income. We don't want to see any reductions of benefits. And many of us are doing everything in our power to make sure President Trump lives up to his commitment as candidate Trump to protect the benefits of Social Security. Same thing to Medicare. Medicare is an incredibly important program. We're all very anxious as to what's happening with the Affordable Care Act. Initially, the Republicans talked about a straight repeal. We are pointing out—
You think that's softening?
I think it is. I think the American people spoke out. We spoke out, said that do you really want to jeopardize in Maryland 400,000 people who have insurance coverage for the first time? Do you really want to weaken the quality coverage they now have for preventive health care, for mental health and addiction services? Do you really want to allow insurance companies to discriminate based upon pre-existing conditions? I think we've made that point loud and clear. And the American people are saying, don't do it. And the Republicans are having second thoughts.
So maybe we end up, instead of repeal and replace, it's more of a tweak job?
I hope that's the case. I don't think we're out of the woods yet. I think there's still some that are trying to particularly cut back the Medicaid expansion, which is very important for those who are the most vulnerable. We don't want those who have no other choice but to use emergency rooms, clogging up emergency rooms, causing a lot more costs in our healthcare system.
Last week, the Dow Jones Industrial Average pierced the 20,000 milestone. It's backed off just a bit since then. One of the reasons a lot of folks identified as their reason to vote for Mr. Trump was his insistence that the market and other areas of American life are too highly regulated. There is a headline of the Wall Street Journal today talks about the Trump administration's interest in rolling back many of the provisions in the Dodd-Frank legislation. One of those provisions was a bill that you sponsored that required oil and gas companies to talk about how much money they're paying to foreign governments. It looks like Congress is posed to repeal that part of the law. What's your reaction to that? What do you think a rollback or a tweaking of Dodd-Frank would mean?
Two questions that you asked. One, in regards to the transparency in dealing with foreign countries by oil companies, that's to deal with what's known as the resource curse. You have these countries, many in Africa, where their people are living in horrible poverty, and their leaders are taking all the profits from their oil and using it for corruption in themselves. So America led, and I was proud to be part of that effort with Senator Lugar, Republican, called Cardin-Lugar proposal, that required the oil companies to disclose their contracts in these countries so that you can track the funds. It has worked. And Europe has followed suit. Canada has followed suit. And now, due to the actions of the Republicans in Congress, we have slowed down and stopped the rule that would implement the American law. That's very unfortunate. It is one of our major anti-corruption tools, and it's now been severely hurt as a result of the Republican action. The president's talking about rolling back a lot of the Dodd-Frank regulations. Well, he talked also about dealing with Wall Street. Now he's giving Wall Street a gift. The people who benefit from the repeal of Dodd-Frank are the millionaires and billionaires on Wall Street, because they can then do things and do risky things where they're not risking their money, they're risking your money. And we saw what happened when we had the financial meltdown on Wall Street. People's life savings were jeopardized, in some cases destroyed. So what he is doing is putting middle-income families at risk. And it could hurt very much their ability to buy a home, to be able to keep that home. We know how many foreclosures we have through in our state. Do we really want to go back to those days where people are losing their homes and losing their savings? We need sensible regulation of greed on Wall Street. And it looks like the president, once again, said during the campaign, he would drain the swamp, deal with what he's doing, just the opposite.
When it comes to corruption, when it comes to just the ethical haze that seems to float over this administration, many of its nominees for cabinet positions, people like Steve Bannon being placed in the inner circle of the National Security Council, who's the gatekeeper? Mr. Trump was asked repeatedly, demanded by all sorts of people on the left and the right to release his tax returns, to be transparent about his financial holdings. He's, you know, bragged about how much money he has. No one knows whether that's true. No one knows where that money is. Who's at this point, with a Republican control of the Senate and the Congress, soon the court, the Supreme Court probably, who's going to be able to hold this administration and this president accountable?
Well, I think, first of all, as far as a gatekeeper, I think most people who have observed President Trump believes there is no gatekeeper. And as one of my colleagues said, it's the last person in the room that has probably the most influence on his decision making. So there isn't an orderly process for how decisions are being made by the president. And too many decisions are being made through a tweet. So I'm not sure there is a gatekeeper as to how he's operating. In regards to accountability, we have a democratic system of government. The accountability rests with the people. The people's voices are being heard. We see every day the organization of protests against policies that he has announced, and that's going to have an impact on our political system. The legislature, the Congress, is a check and balance. We can pass laws, and I am urging my colleagues to use our power, particularly as it relates to this executive order. We can take action to make sure there is no religious ban in America. We need to act. The courts can be an independent branch. They are an independent branch. They can act. I think a lot of what the president is doing is unconstitutional. That's why we're particularly concerned about the Supreme Court nominee, to make sure that that person is independent and is prepared to exercise the role of the judicial branch of government to be as a check and balance to the abusive powers of a president.
Is the check and balance capacity of Democrats in Congress? Republicans hold a 52-48 advantage in the Senate. I mean, is the capacity really there? Does it have teeth?
It certainly is challenging for the Democrats in Congress, where we're in the minority in both houses and we don't have the White House, to be able to stop actions that we think are wrong. We even have a hard time to slow down things. We can for a while, but ultimately there are going to be votes. So it's a challenge. But what we hope will happen, and we've talked to a lot of Republicans, we know they disagree with the president. Will they be willing to stand up with us so that we can act as a true check and balance on policies that are just not in our country's interest? All of us should have one common objective, and that is to make sure our country is safe and that we move forward for our values. And I would hope Republicans would join Democrats when President Trump goes in the wrong direction to say, wait a minute, we have our responsibilities.
You're listening to Midday here on 88.1 WIPR. I'm Tom Hall. My guest is the senior senator from Maryland, Senator Ben Cardin. 410-662-8780 is our number. Midday at WIPR.org is our email address and our Twitter handle at Midday Tom Hall. Senator Danielle writes in an email, "I'm a gay married woman from Lutherville. I am concerned about many of Trump's cabinet picks, but none more than Jeff Sessions. She asked me to ask you, what can I do to oppose the most egregious of Trump's cabinet picks besides call my senator, you or Mr.
Well,
Ben Howell?"
Again, I think public opinion is very important. We saw that in regards to the DeVos nomination for Secretary of Education. Two Republicans have come out against her.
What do you think her chances are? Now, that would make the vote, if I'm counting right, 50-50. And obviously, Vice President Pence could break that tie. I mean, are there Republicans who can be convinced to vote against her, more Republicans over the weekend? Because right now it looks like the vote's scheduled for Monday.
The vote is scheduled for Monday. I don't know. The answer to the question, I know that those who are concerned about whether Ms. DeVos would represent the interest of education in this country are using the opportunities to organize and go into those senatorial districts where they think they can make a difference. In regards to Senator Sessions, his vote will be coming up next week for the Attorney General. I've already announced my opposition to his nomination. All I can tell you is there's national groups working very hard to make sure that the American people understand Mr. Sessions' background and commitment on many of the civil rights issues. And I would just urge you to join those groups in their protests.
Rex Tillerson was confirmed by the Senate as Secretary of State. He is now in office. It was the closest vote, the most opposition to any Secretary of State in the last 50 years. The vote was 56-43. Most of the other nominees that have gone through, you know, it's a margin of 80-something to 20-something or 10-something. Now that he's in office, what sort of impact, what sort of influence would you, as a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee or anybody else in the Senate, be able to exert on the foreign policy of the United States?
Well, I oppose Mr. Tillerson. I oppose he had no background as far as Secretary of State. He was CEO of ExxonMobil. He had a very friendly relationship with Russia. I was concerned he would not be objective in representing American values. But he's now the Secretary of State. Both Secretary Tillerson and myself want our country to succeed. We're going to do everything we can for America. So I hope I can work with the Secretary of State to advance America's interests globally. The Secretary of State's our principal diplomat. He has diplomacy. He has development assistance. We need to use every tool in our toolbox to keep America safe and to prevent the need for us to use our military. I think Secretary Tillerson appreciates that role. I could tell you that I'm going to underscore that role, and I plan to work with him in order to promote American values globally.
Can you give me an example of how that works? You sit down with Mr. Tillerson and say, okay, we disagree on a lot. What do we agree on, or what's your entree to him? How does that actually work? Folks say, I want to work with someone, that sounds great, but what does it actually mean?
Well, he has a lot of business before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, so we're going to be working together. We know we have to do that. But as he starts to develop a bilateral relationship with Russia, I can assure you that not only this Democratic senator, but there are many Republican senators who are going to say, don't trust Mr. Putin. Let me tell you why you can't trust the president of Russia. And we'll give him some background and information. We will suggest, as he is talking to Mr. Putin about perhaps a relationship in Syria, that you may want to take a look at some of these human rights violations within his own country as to how he's treated his opposition, and that Mr. Tillerson will be a lot stronger if Mr. Putin knows that he's not going to back off of the values that have made America the great country that it's in. That's how we'll work with him.
On 88.1 WIPR, it's Midday. I'm Tom Hall, my guest, Senator Ben Cardin. Let's go to the phone. Susan in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Senator Cardin.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Senator Cardin and Tom. I have two questions. First, what can you do as senator to remove Steve Bannon from the National Security Council? Bannon's stated views, including wanting to destroy the state, are demonstrably dangerous to the United States of America. He doesn't belong there. And additionally, it's concerning that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the director of national intelligence have been removed. So that's one question. How can we address that? And then secondly, Senator, How can we support your efforts to stop Scott Pruitt from becoming the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, which would be clearly disastrous? Are there other senators, Republican senators, who agree that he would be a problematic appointee? Thank you.
So two questions. One is about Bannon. A lot of people are very upset about him. The other is the head of the EPA and the effect that that could have on the Chesapeake Bay here in Maryland.
Well, there's nothing that we can do to remove Steve Bannon from being the principal advisor to President Trump. That's not a confirmation appointment. It's automatic, and we can't stop that. When that appointment was made or announced, I immediately urged the president-elect to reverse himself and not let Steve Bannon be in that type of position, knowing his background on a lot of the race issues and many of the other issues. I think it was a terrible choice. Now the National Security Council is the White House, is the president's security council. He gets to pick who he wants, and there is no congressional action as far as the membership is concerned. We are looking at a bill that would make it clear that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs should be a member of the Security Council. He has always been a member of the Security Council. And of course, President Trump has indicated he will no longer be a member. We do not believe that a political appointment such as Mr. Bannon should be a permanent member of the Security Council. Yes, he should have access when it's important for him to have access, but he shouldn't be a permanent member. So we are voicing ourselves similar to what you have said, but we really don't have, these are presidential prerogatives. We really don't have the ability to control who will have the president's ear on how he makes decisions. And obviously that's a matter of major concern. Mr. Pruitt's nomination went through the committee on a party vote. His nomination is not yet scheduled for the floor of the United States Senate. I'm not sure when that nomination will come up. I have also announced my opposition to Mr. Pruitt. He has sued the Environmental Protection Agency in regards to our Chesapeake Bay program in Maryland and many other issues. So I have major concerns and will continue to work against his confirmation.
Thanks for your call. Susan Jane in Towson, welcome to Midday with Senator Cardin.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. And Senator Cardin, I just want to say that you make me proud to be from Maryland. You're on the side of justice, fairness, and honesty, and I really appreciate that. My question is, the 35-page dossier about Trump and the Russian connections that came out in January got a lot of attention because of the fallacious accusations against Mr. Trump, but little notice was a promise by the president of the Russian oil giant Rosneft that if Trump lifts sanctions against Russia, he will receive up to a 19% stake in the Russian-owned oil giant. This is on page, I think, 30 of the dossier, which was published in full by BuzzFeed. In December, Rosneft privatized 19.5% of the Russian-controlled oil company. Reuters reported that it cannot determine who bought it because that stake is held in the Cayman Islands, which is, as you know, pretty much inaccessible. So my question, you know, yesterday Trump relaxed sanctions against Russia. A couple weeks ago, he told CNN that he was open to lifting sanctions against Russia. My question is, are Democrats, and if not, why not, why aren't Democrats screaming for an investigation of Trump's ties to this Rosneft deal?
All right. Thanks for your call, Jane. We should mention that the documents published by BuzzFeed have been investigated by a number of news organizations over the past several months, including before the campaign, before the election. And none of it has been able to be independently verified and confirmed. Senator?
Well, first of all, we are calling for an investigation, as you point out. I filed legislation that would set up an independent commission because I don't believe it's a congressional committee is enough. I think you should have an independent commission. It should investigate Russia's activities. We investigated the attack on our country on 9/11 by an independent commission. This is an attack. It may not be by a MiG, but it was by a mouse. And it was an attack on our free system of government. And we should have an independent investigation. And wherever it leads, we should find out, take action against those who are responsible. We've also have very much, I filed a resolution in regards to the emolument clause of the Constitution. I believe that President Trump was at risk of violating the Constitution when he took the oath of office because of his foreign interests. We don't know all about his foreign interests because he never released his tax returns. We know that he has not divested or set up a blind trust of his business interests. So I think he's in danger of accepting foreign gratuities, which is unconstitutional under our Constitution. And that also needs to be investigated. And then lastly, in regards to sanction relief, we have taken action. We are following legislation that will require congressional consultation and an opportunity for Congress to weigh in before he can eliminate or change any of the sanctions against Russia. And we filed legislation to strengthen the sanctions against Russia. So we're trying to put as much of a spotlight on all these issues, including Mr. Trump's involvements, if there's any that needs to be looked at.
But you expect that there will be hearings on these issues and there will be commissions formed one way or the other?
There are hearings in regards to Russia's attack against America. Those hearings are taking place in various committees. There's an investigation taking place within the Intelligence Committee. The committee I serve on, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, will have a hearing this week on Russia.
Senator Ben Cardin is my guest here on Midday. I'm Tom Hall. You are welcome to join us when we come back from a quick break. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. As you can imagine, we've got lots of folks lined up on the phone. We're getting lots of tweets, lots of emails. I will do my darndest to get to as many of them as we can. Stay with us.
You're tuned to your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. If you've just joined us, my guest today is Senator Ben Cardin. We're talking Trump. We're talking health care. We're talking about issues facing our state and our country. And we are talking with you. 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Senator, we have a number of emails that sort of voice the same kind of concern. Here's Christina saying, is there anything that can stop the president from becoming a dictator? Here's Beryl calling in saying, it seems that more people wanted Clinton than Trump, and since he was elected by fewer votes, he no longer has a mandate to nominate. Perhaps we should just wait the 4 years, or hopefully less, until there is a mandate. And then we've got someone else writing saying, what is the best thing we can do? What are the ways to check his power? What are the top three most effective things citizens can do? There is a level of anxiety. There is a level of sort of raw fear about this man and this presidency and this administration that is really unprecedented in American history. What's your response to people who are that scared?
First of all, I sense this. I walk down the street, people come up to me and say the exact same thing. People want to be engaged. They realize that this is their country, and they want to make sure that we, the people, have the say. And they are concerned that they're seeing the values that made this country the great nation it is being compromised by some of the policies of Mr. Trump. And then they asked, how can they get engaged? That's the normal question. And they have. We saw that on the March in Washington by the Women's March in Washington. I was proud to be there with three generations of women in my family. And it was a remarkable opportunity for energy to be shown. There's been follow-up to that as regards to many of the issues. We've seen where action has worked, the Affordable Care Act. I really do believe we have changed the landscape on the Republican strategy on the Affordable Care Act. Now, that's not a done deal. Got to keep it going. We're going to have a way that through our public information, through our webpage, et cetera, that we can get information as to what is happening, that you can know what we're doing, and you can tie into some of the activities that we're doing. There are national groups that have like-minded views. You should work with those groups. Our challenge is to prioritize. There is so much going on. So many times, Mr. Trump has changed the news within a few minutes. When we thought we had a chance to do something, he's been able to change the news content because he knows how to use the electronic technologies. So we have to be smart in prioritizing where we can make a difference by our voices and by hopefully our votes in Washington, where we can get enough support to make sure America's values are maintained.
Strategically, there's one thing for people to take to the streets, and people are taking to the streets for all sorts of reasons, and in many ways, it's just been 2 weeks. What is the best strategy for the Democratic Party and for those who oppose this president? 25 Democratic seats are up for election in 2018, as opposed to 8 Republican seats. What is the best way forward? For example, you and others sponsored a bill to rescind the Muslim ban, right? And Tom Cotton, a Republican from Arkansas, said, nope, don't want to do that. And under the Senate rules, if one senator objects, the bill doesn't come to the floor. So you make the gesture, it gets rejected, then what? What is the best strategy, the best way forward politically to effectively counter the initiatives of this administration?
Well, first, it's been 2 weeks. I know everybody thinks it's been a long time. We've been living under the Trump presidency now for just 2 weeks. We've got to be selective as to where we channel the energy that's out there. And it's not up for me to make those priorities, although I think I have to be part of trying to make those priorities. So at this particular moment, we know that health care was their first thing out of the gate. So we did put a lot of effort. And I think, again, it's paid off to protect the advancements that we've made in health care. We're seeing that an issue such as the Supreme Court vacancy, that could have an effect for generations. I mean, we're talking about a lifetime appointment for a person who's been nominated as 49 years of age. I mean, you're talking about 30, 40 years he could be in office. So that's something we, by necessity, have to concentrate on, how this Supreme Court vacancy is filled. It's not only this individual. It's the likelihood there could be other vacancies in the Supreme Court under a Trump presidency. So that, by necessity, we have to concentrate on. We're now looking at what he's trying to do with special corporate interests. I think American people will recoil on this. I mean, he talked about standing up for the average person against the special interests, but we've seen over and over again the special interests are getting the first things out of the gate. The Dodd-Frank relief is going to help the wealthy. What he's doing on his tax proposals, let's take a look at how average families fare versus the wealthy. What he's done with his cabinet choices. It's hard to understand how he's drained the swamp when he's put certain people in charge of different agencies. So I think we put a spotlight on that. The support he has starts to erode, and then we, the people, will have ultimately the ability to change these policies.
Senator Ben Cardin is my guest. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. Let's go back to the phones. Oscar in Chestnut Ridge, welcome to Midday with Senator Cardin.
Thank you. Senator, you've been historically a person that brings together both Democrats and Republicans, whether you've been in the House and now in the Senate. You have a way of persuading people to do what's right. With your Foreign Relations Committee, you'll need more than just the senators to make policy there. And do you feel that you're able to work with a decent number of Republicans that put the national concerns above the Republican concerns of the president, and be able to be critical when it's necessary? Can that happen with your committee?
I think it can. I really do believe in the area of foreign policy, which, by the way, the president has the upper hand because he can speak with one voice. Congress takes a long time for it to get our act in a unified way. But I do think that you're going to find, as it relates to our relationship with Russia, as to what's happening in Syria and Ukraine, what's happening in many parts of the world, that you're going to find Senate Foreign Relations Committee. We've had a great history of bipartisan cooperation between Senator Corker and myself. I think that will continue and become stronger. I've had several conversations with Senator McCain and Senator Graham on foreign policy matters, and I think even as early as this week, you're going to see some actions taken by us to counter some of the statements that have been made by the Trump administration as it relates to Russia. So, yes, I do think there is a chance. And I appreciate that you indicated that we have to work together. Democrats and Republicans need to work together. I recognize that. We all have a common interest in our country. I'm going to do everything I can to move our country forward in the right direction. And I hope that I can not only work with Republicans in Congress, I hope there will be opportunities to work with the Trump administration.
But I understand.
But when they deviate, you're going to hear from us.
2 weeks ago, at this very hour, President Trump delivered an inaugural address that struck many as particularly brutish, vulgar almost. And I wonder, I mean, the Senate's been called the world's greatest deliberative body. You are an historian of the Senate. You know the Senate rules backwards and forwards better than probably anybody else in that lauded chamber. Do you think that the sort of brutishness, if you accept that adjective for Mr. Trump's style, do you think that that has a chance of intimating itself into the discussions in the Senate? Will the vulgarity of Trump trickle down?
You know, I'm an optimist by nature. I serve in the United States Senate. I think I have to be an optimist. But I have grave concerns about Mr. Trump's style and it being conducive to what we need in working in a way that's in the best interest of our country. I think it's going to be much greater of a challenge. And you're absolutely correct. I was very close in physical distance from the president when he delivered that inaugural address. What an opportunity it is. A new president, first inaugural address, the world is watching. And what did he do? It sounded like a campaign speech. Didn't sound like bringing America together. Didn't sound like America's global leadership. It was a missed opportunity. Worse than that, it was, in many cases, a dark speech. I agree with you that it was not good.
We have an email from Sid about the Muslim ban, who says, will you blockade the Senate until this ban is rescinded? And I want to go to the phones to Samuel in Annapolis, who has a question along the same lines. Samuel, welcome to Midday with Senator Cardin. You're going to be our last caller, so if you could make it brief, I'd be grateful.
Thank you. So my question is that if, for instance, we know that ISIS stated they would put people in the refugees, how can we not ban refugees, but yet again protect ourselves? Because doing the right thing, but yet then doing the feel-good thing might be two different things.
I think it's a valid point. And let me make it clear. We are for extreme vetting. Not only refugees, but people come to America. We want to make sure terrorists don't come to this country. So refugees are subject to extreme vetting. They go through personal interviews, not one, but at least two, and some cases more. They go through background checks, not through one agency, but through five agencies. They're screened not only by us, they're screened by the United Nations refugees. And there hasn't been a single Syrian refugee who's caused a problem in this country. They're women and children primarily. They're not the problem.
Senator, I appreciate all the time. Very much looking forward to our next occasion to get together. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Senator Ben Cardin, in about an hour, Senator Cardin will host a community conversation about the future of the Affordable Care Act. That event starts at 2 o'clock at the Bon Secours Family Support Center on Fulton Avenue in Baltimore. Come to our website, wypr.org/midday, for a link with details. I should also mention that the senator will hold a press conference Monday morning concerning the Muslim ban. That's it for us today. Coming up Monday, a conversation about advertising and how much of it comes to us surreptitiously and even invidiously, often so heavily disguised that we don't even know it is advertising sponsored by a corporate or other entity. Mara Einstein from Queens College in New York will be my guest. She's the author of a new book called Black Ops Advertising. We'll also be joined by a professor from Boston University named Edward Boches, who for many years ran a major advertising agency in New England. So on Sunday, make your note of your favorite Super Bowl ad and share it with us Monday here on Midday. Sorry I couldn't get to all of your calls, questions, and comments, but I appreciate everybody who chimed in. Until Monday, I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy the game. I urge you to root for Atlanta. Have a good weekend.